you down, knock you to the ground. If you let it, we were made to overcome. Victory is won, don't forget it. For it's the joy of being saved.
Welcome to the Journey 8, and I'm Reverend Judy Hosner, and that was a young lady by the name of Karen Williams from her album, Letting Go of Perfect. Isn't that a great album name? I like it. Song is Head Up, and I thought it was appropriate for tonight. We have an awesome show for tonight. I am really jazzed. Okay, so before I bring in our first person, I want to say a couple things. And also, we are trying to get Karen on the show. It's just that our dates are not matching right at the moment. But I promise you, she will be here. Okay, before any other announcements, remember, you have several ways of tapping into the show live. Obviously, you can go to BBS's website and find us there at bbs.com/thejourney8. Press that play button and you'll be right in. Or you can wait for about 36 hours and listen to me on the archives on the same page. Or people are finding out that when they're in their car or halfway between home and work, they can dial on their smart or dumb phone, and you can patch in by dialing 716-748-0150. All right, so I am very happy to be back. I am, it was a very long sabbatical, about 6 weeks, recovering from pneumonia. I'm feeling awesome, though. I want to thank you for the cards and the emails and all the funny jokes, which make it hard when you can't breathe to laugh. But it was great. And so, I now know that I can say what it's like to take a type A person, moi, and all those other letters, ADD, ADH, A, B, C, D, lock them away for almost 6 weeks at home. It's not a pretty sight. But rest assured, the cats and dogs are still alive, traumatized by a grumpy old preacher, but they're alive. Yes. And here we go. Speaking of recovering, I just want to say hi to a young friend of ours from church, which is, of course, Life's Journey, United Church of Christ. Her name is Skylar. Skylar found out the hard way that flying from the bleachers at school is not a good thing unless you have wings, which she does not yet. As a result, she has a mean old broken foot with a cool green cast. Yeah. Skylar, you're in our prayers and our thoughts. The prayer warriors here at the Journey 8 will be hoping for a fast recovery. Remember, this is from Judy. Cast and broken bones are temporary. And God will give you the strength to get up and go about your business before you know it, if you behave. That means no learning how to run on crutches. Your mother has eyes in the back of their head. Okay, so this week we are focusing on three people I am so honored to have on the show. The first half of the show, we're going to be speaking to a really neat guy that has is starting to become a very good friend. I only have a couple of announcements, and then we're going to move right into discussion with Wasif. This week, and I know all my regulars are going to be, like, stoked. Guess what? The Journey 8's webpage is finally up and running. Yes, it's been a long time coming, but I finally figured out how to push some buttons. It's basic and simple, like me. More simple, I guess. But it's up. And of course, that's thejourney8.org, O-R-G. Remember, I did this myself. Please be gentle with your comments. All right. Also, for those of you who might be listening for the first time, we made a commitment at the Christmas show that 2016 was going to be the year of religious and personal tolerance. This is all we're going to focus on during the year, other than music and stuff. But the focus of the show is hopefully to teach some of us, including myself, more about tolerance so that we can learn. And by learning the truth about each other, I believe a lot of really bad stuff like discrimination and false statements will fall along the wayside. Last but not least, as luck would have it, at about 6:30 tonight, our time, you're in North Carolina, it started raining. For those of you who are new to the show, rain is okay. Thunderstorms are not. So here's the deal. We've been in touch with the local weather forecasting, and as it stands right now, there's no thunderstorms. But those of you who are regulars know, if the warning light goes off here in the studio, and I leave the air abruptly, my wonderful, capable engineer will step in and hopefully piece me back together, because I will be off the air. We shut down all the electrical here in the studio at home for safety reasons. I'm not anticipating that happen. All right. So here we go. Before we play this intro song for Wasif, we are going to say a few little things about it. And first of all, as some of you know, it is my friend, Carol Simpson. You've heard her a couple other times with some other songs. This is an adaptation she does of the scripture, 1 Corinthians 13. As you know, that is known as the love passage. It's used in a lot of wedding ceremonies and all that stuff. She does a beautiful, beautiful rendition of it. And as soon as we're done with Carol, we're going to lead right into just a wonderful discussion with Wasif. So, Mr. Engineer, if you've got 1 Corinthians, let's take a listen.
Though I may speak with bravest heart and have a gift to all inspire,
Carol Simpson, a dear friend of mine for over 30 years, and what a voice. All right, there's a group of wonderful people that I am honored to know. They share a common bond with the Journey 8 and Life's Journey United Church of Christ, which is our home church. They are the members of Alamance County's first mosque called Burlington Masjid. The gentleman you're about to hear is fast becoming a dear friend of mine. Please listen tonight. He has some wonderful things to say. His name is Wasif, and I'm going to mess up his last name. I always do. It is Karish, I think. He'll tell me. Anyway, Wasif, are you there?
Yes, I am. Wasif Qureshi is here. Judy Hosner.
My name is so easy, yours is so hard, but that's what relationships are about, right?
Hey, we are on a first name basis. I think that's what counts, you know?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, Wasif, you have some interesting things that you want to tell people out there. Where would you like to start?
You know, I have been actually thinking about that all day today, what, you know, the format of our conversation should be. And I think I have a treat for your listeners, because I initially actually wanted to start someplace very boring. And that boring place was going to be, you know, give you the basics of Islam and give you, you know, things that you can find on Google. And I mean, nowadays you can turn on the TV and find way more exciting things than, you know, educational information on Google. And so I thought we would start by a more personal account of the daily dealings of an American Muslim man, being myself. And I'd like to just inform your listeners and just give them a little bit of a background so they can have a collage of my virtual being, if you will, in their minds, if that's okay with you.
It's okay with me. This is your time to speak.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Saudi Arabia. And when people think about Saudi Arabia, they typically think about Sharia law and heinous punishments for crimes and, you know, the women all covered up in veils. And these are really, you know, some of it is true, some of it is very, you know, regional, and some of it's even very extreme. For example, I did see, you know, women covering themselves, but I also saw the same women shopping in malls at the Gucci store, you know, and stores where I couldn't really go and buy anything myself because I couldn't afford it. But, you know, you don't get to see the full plethora of what it is to live in Saudi Arabia. But why I like to start there, why I like to actually start there, is because I had a very unique experience living in Saudi Arabia that I think I would like to share with your listeners, if I may. And that unique experience was actually participating as a child in the Gulf War. Now, when you think about the Gulf War, for me, and now I have lived in the United States since 1999, and Greensboro, North Carolina is actually the longest I have lived anywhere in my life. When I think about the Gulf War, in hindsight, I think about CNN, I think about Saddam Hussein, and I think about Kuwait, and I think about oil. There's a reality to that for the citizens that survived that war on all sides, including a boy that lived in Saudi Arabia. So living in Saudi Arabia, I actually lived in around Ras Tanura, which is the biggest oil refinery in the world. And when Saddam was sending his scuds to hit this oil refinery, CNN was just coming on as a media platform, or a news platform, sorry. And they would announce a red alert. And every time there was this red alert, you could hear it. You could hear it in the distance. You know, if you're playing outside, you would hear it on the TV. And you would run inside. And why are you? The question is, why is everybody running inside? Of course, the missile is coming. That's going to hit the town, and you would think explosion. But what you would miss is that actually he was firing chemical grade weapons, or using chemical grade weapons, and shooting off mustard gas missiles. So, if one of those missiles hit, that mustard gas would have literally, you know, done its damage on me and my family, and we would just have to watch each other pass away. Our whole house was covered in plastic. Our whole house was covered in plastic. And every time we would run inside, we all as a family, all six of us at the time, we would have to put on our gas masks and sit there and wait for this red alert to either go redder, which God, thank God that it never did, or to subside. And just sitting there at that young age, Judy, one thing became very clear to me, that all fire-based weaponry, may it be a missile, may it be a bullet, may it be a bomb, it does not care about what your politics are. It does not care about your sex, your gender, your preferences as a citizen, your preferences as a child. It does not ask any questions, but, you know, it's only good at doing really one thing, and that's doing its job, which is called cause death and destruction. Now, that's a really dark point to start an introduction, but I there's an upside to this. I think living here in the United States of America is a amazing gift. And why I say that is because so much of the challenge that the world citizen faces, it is actually not faced here in the United States. We are in a very privileged, amazing position. You know, we hear about the fact that the United States now has been war with the many different countries in the Middle East since the beginning of this millennium.
Mm-hmm.
But we never hear that any destruction has been actually caused on U.S. soil. You never hear about the, you know, next U.S. town being blown up or death tolls of civilians as high as up to 500,000 like they're now in Iraq. You don't hear about refugees trying to cross the border to Canada or from Canada to here and dying in boating accidents. And I'm pointing out these really, really negative things that are going on around the world today to actually take just one moment, just take a single moment and really thank God for all of the gifts and all of the benefits and all of the peace, really, that we have here in the United States. Like I said, I have lived in Greensboro longer than I have lived anywhere else in the world, and it's an amazing place to me just because of all of the benefits that it carries with it, including peace, including abundance, including cleanliness, including the hospitality, honestly, of the people here. Including the people in the Burlington area, which have so very welcomed our mosque, even went to the extent of taking out a full-page ad in the Burlington paper in support of the first mosque in Burlington.
Yes,
I've said a lot. I just wanted to pause a second, make sure we're still headed in clear waters in the right direction. How are you feeling about this conversation?
Well, I think what's important is definitely because you and I are going to have an ongoing, you know, co-hosting type of thing. You're going to be here more than just once. And it's good to set the tone of where you came from, you know, who you are, and why it's so important that you and I are starting this journey to hopefully teach people the realities of Christianity, the realities of Islam, and what it's like to be friends and all the other things that are going on. I mean, you have your fingers into so much. The idea is to teach people so that maybe you and I can bring one person, just one person, to the reality that it's all the same God.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. And
so you're doing great.
Well, thank you. I will actually use that as the perfect segue. I wanna now fast forward and bring us to modern time, away from the Gulf War and away from my past and into my present condition. Presently, I've actually served as the president for the Islamic Center of Greensboro. Third or fourth largest mosque in North Carolina. You know, about the congregation, last time we counted, was about 1,024, 1,000 some people that are members. And we serve a very diverse group of countries. And that's because, as you are aware, Judy, that High Point, Greensboro, and the Triad area is a hub for immigrants, actually, also refugees from all over the world.
Yes.
And I've serving as the president of this mosque, and now also segueing into, you know, some work here in Burlington. I think there is one very key thing that's missing from the, you can call it the Muslimosphere. That's a word I just made up, but it sounds all right. The Muslimosphere here in the United States is seeing a lot of success. And when I say success, is that people are allowed to practice their religion in peace. Of course, there are challenges, but for the most part, you know, I think to be able to practice your religion in peace, and this is not because of Islam per se, but in this country, it's got, you know, everything to do with the freedom that Americans enjoy. Whereas these freedoms are not enjoyed by people who live in other countries. And we enjoy this freedom. Now, the problem we are facing is that there are in this world right now, there's 1.6 billion Muslims. That makes about 23% of the world's population. So one in every four people that you can potentially meet from this planet will be actually a Muslim. And the largest Muslim country, you would also be surprised to know, is not Saudi Arabia or Syria or Egypt. It's actually Indonesia, which is,
really?
Yes, 170 million Muslims. It's followed by then Pakistan, which is 136 million Muslims. Then
wow.
Think, okay, now Saudi Arabia. No, then there's Bangladesh, which is 106 million Muslims. And then you're like, now for sure, an Arab country has got to come now, you know? It's got to be Saudi Arabia now. And
gotta
then
be.
It's actually India, which is not even a Muslim country. It's actually a Hindu country, but there are 103 million Muslims in India. Why I begin that to say is that, you know, most Arabs are Muslims, but most Muslims are not Arabs. The demographic of what a Muslim is or what he looks like is very different from, you know, the cliches of the Muslims that you might see sprawled across, you know, the TV or Netflix movies or what have you. But the demographic is very different. The reality of the situation is very different. And as you started the conversation today with tolerance, you know, is the key through which we will achieve our goals, and really with tolerance, one can finally, I think, if you view tolerance as one of the higher aspirations of man, then I think that allows you to understand that your needs will always be greater than your differences, and that means that in order to meet those needs, sometimes you have to put those differences aside and come to a point of solidarity between groups. May they be Christian or a Muslim group, may they be Jewish and Muslim groups, may they be Muslim and other Muslim groups. And so I wanted to just give that little bit of statistical background to kind of paint a picture of what Islam looks like throughout the world in this modern day and time.
Yeah, that's kind of neat, because I would have never guessed any of those countries in that order. Obviously, like most uninformed Americans, I would have said Saudi Arabia. That's all you hear about. That's why. You know,
well,
the media,
yeah, and you'd think Egypt or Saudi Arabia, Syria maybe, which actually now has the largest, by the way, displaced population of people in the history of this planet.
And you're
right now,
come
the center of New North Carolinians outside of, which is stationed at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro. We recently did an event with them, and they outlined some stats, including 50 million people now displaced on this planet. So is there a need of ours that is greater than our differences? Yes.
Yes, and I truly, truly mean this when I say,
yeah,
I want you to come back soon, next week. And we are going to focus specifically, because our time is coming up already,
okay,
specifically on the Syrian refugee issues, because so many people that I speak to when I'm doing chaplain work or things outside of the walls of my own church, so many people are uninformed big time about what's going on, and it's sad. People are dying, you know.
Yes.
And so, you know, one of the things I wanted to put in before we close off is that the idea of you and I partnering on the Journey 8 is so that you, as a Muslim, can tell me, you know, what's going on and why does this mean, you know, why is this holiday so important or whatever. And I can understand more when I hear. I want to be able to relate, and I want my listeners, and I have some very devout, I think I got 13 or 14 devout listeners now, and I want them to understand that knowledge takes away fear. Knowledge takes away discrimination. Knowledge takes away anger. And someday, I believe, here in Burlington, North Carolina, we are going to walk on the sidewalk together and never fear each other.
Amen.
That's
to that.
I
look forward to that day. I look forward to coming back, and I look forward to growing this partnership. Like I said, and I think we both agree, that our is just now is the time to stop with the differences, and let's just try to identify the needs that we have and how we can better serve this planet, starting with our own areas of influence, may that be Burlington, and then trying to grow that to hopefully make an impact in people's lives all around the state and maybe globally at some point if God intends that for us.
Yes, and I want you to you know, work. I want us to work together, you know, so closely that we can almost read each other's mind. This is an important, this whole issue that I dedicated this year's broadcast, this issue of tolerance, is just so important to me because, as you know, you know, my life is, you know, always had somebody, you know, wondering what I was doing and why are you doing this and that. And I'm sure it's the same for you. I think my biggest question for you tonight is, if you had one thing on your mind right now that you wish you could fix, fix is not a good word, but what would it be?
Well,
as a Muslim man?
I think I'm going to take that question and just briefly expand on the scope of it a little bit, because I think if I just gave you one thing, it might be an incomplete answer. But if I was to focus on one, let's say, project that I would like for, you know, that I would think would benefit the people in my my surrounding, I think that would be an initiative to take in or help the war orphans. And there are so many now in Afghanistan. Now, in the past 30 years, there's 2 million orphans. And, you know, most people think about the future. They think about flying cars or you know, high, tall buildings. But, you know, my question is, who are those flying cars and those tall buildings and those fancy gadgets for? They're, if not for the children, if not for, and, you know, some part of this population now, of this future that we have, of these children that we have, are orphans. And so, you know, there are many ways to help a situation. Even if it's one of the worst situations that you have seen, there is a way to help it. And I'm of the cloth that, you know, I'm not for war, but I know war causes a lot of tragedy. So wherever mm-hmm. this tragedy is being caused, you know, let me see where I can put my 2 cents in and help. And so if I had one project, I would certainly, and it's something that I'm very passionate about, and I'm guessing you can probably hear it in my voice, but, you know, just to help these children somehow who have not only lost everything, but they have lost their guides, their two main guides, the mother and the father. And now they're in a situation where they're an orphan, and, you know, my question is, is there a way to help them? And if there is, I want to find those avenues. I want to find those ways.
Right. Well, I encourage you to listen to the second half of the show, because the two young ladies that are coming up are talking about a trip they made, a missionary trip to Mozambique for children.
Wow, yeah. Amazing.
So, I encourage you to continue listening. In the meantime, I'm going to say I already learned so much in the 20 minutes or so we had together. We're going to sit down together and put out some specific dates, and hopefully you become a regular co-host with me, kind of like Reverend Ellen when she's on board. And we're going to try and chip away at this week by week. How's that sound?
I am excited to be on board with you. I'm thankful for your friendship, and I am very thankful to you and the station for the opportunity to speak my mind, and hopefully when we get some feedback from your listeners, hopefully answer some questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Wasif, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Judy, take care. I'll be listening to the second half of the show. Good luck.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. So we do have two young ladies that Jen Phipps, if you remember the name, my regular listeners, last year I mentioned to you that this was a lifelong wish of hers to go to Africa and do some missionary work. So I'm not going to say too much more, because I want her to tell you the story. And Jen, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
All right. And is Jenna with you?
I'm here.
Okay. Is Jenna there with you too?
Yes.
Oh, there you are. Okay. Here. Your voices are the same. I don't know which one I'm talking to. Okay. So, as a little intro, Jen Phipps and I have known each other for about 6 years now. And Jen, why don't you start? And you guys probably have your own little thing that you've worked out. Tell us, what in the world made you want to go to Mozambique, Africa?
Well, I wanted to go to Africa since I was a little kid. I felt called to go, and I told Mom I wanted to go, and I wanted to be a missionary since I was little, and she told me no. But I've always felt called, always felt that pull, and even cried whenever I saw little kids on the TV. And then a little over 15 years ago, I heard about Mozambique and saw the ministry that I actually went with in Mozambique there, and decided that that was where I wanted to go and felt called to go to them.
And what was it that you did there?
We stayed at an orphanage. It was actually called a children's center, called the Sempeto Children's Center. And we just stayed there and helped the children out there, and we went on outreaches pretty much every day, different outreaches.
Wow. And these are all orphans, correct?
Yes, they're mostly orphans. Some of them actually did have families that they were reintegrating into. How would you really describe that? You just go down better than me. They were reintegrating them back into their families. There was a change recently in between. Before, it used to be they were seeing a lot of children there because their parents were dying, but now it's due to poverty. The parents can't take care of their children, so they send them to the orphanage. But they're seeing that they do better with their families. So what they're doing when the children come there, they try to help their families get established again while the children are staying at the center, and then they put them back in, they reintegrate them back into their family life.
Oh, and when you think about it, that's probably the perfect solution, because a child does need a mother and a father, and if that's possible by just as you said, a reintegration program. That's awesome. So
yeah, we saw a couple kids come there. Their families would come on Sundays for the service, the church service, and then the kids would stay there during the week with the missionaries. But then they would get to see their families on Sunday. So mm-hmm. I guess that was while the family was getting reestablished.
Wow. So tell us what a typical day was. And you were there for 2 weeks, right?
Right. I don't think any day was typical. But we woke up about 6 o'clock in the morning every morning, though, to children singing. We were next to the preschool room, and they would wake us up singing songs in Portuguese, which I actually have a little recording on my phone because it's just so beautiful. And then we would out play with the kids and get ready for usually an outreach. We would go most afternoons on some type of outreach into the city.
And on Mozambican time.
Yeah, Mozambican time. Mozambican time is not like strict time.
Whenever they want to go, we go.
Yes. Whenever they want to go, we go. And then we would go out into the city and we would minister or feed people. And we went out to the street and we went to the jail, met street kids. We went to the hospital. We went to the garbage dump, which was a mountain of garbage on fire. And there was children and people living in there that we ministered to them. And then we would come back and we would spend time with the children and just play with them. And sometimes we would help teach them or I would teach them music. Mm-hmm. They would beat up my guitar or braid our hair.
Well, let me ask you a question, both of you.
Okay.
What was the hardest thing for you? This is a third world country, so obviously, you know, you've been born and raised in the United States. What was the biggest adjustment you had to make right off the bat?
Biggest adjustment that
we had? Taking cold showers.
Oh, no hot water, huh? You're lucky you had water, though, right?
Not being able to be open and be ourselves. We're a gay couple, so not being able to be out. That was a pretty big adjustment for us, especially as newlyweds.
Yes. Now, yes, that's true. When the kids came to you, like you said, they were braiding your hair and things like that. What was their biggest fascination or if they had questions about, you know, you Americans, what seemed to catch them? What, you know, what was their attraction other than, you know, you were there to try and teach them some information about the Lord?
Our tattoos.
They did like that.
Oh,
they like her tattoos. And
Jen has red and blue hair. They've never seen that before.
That's true. You know, I'm so used to seeing you, Jen, you know, as Jen, you know, tattoos, red and blue hair, that it never dawned on me that that would be a big deal for, you know, a youngster in a third world country. Wow.
Not even just the youngsters, just everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone there.
And I tried to cover them all up. I even tried to dye my hair, but it all came through. So it was like God said, no, you get to be yourself. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you tried to teach them music and stuff, were they receptive or understood? Or, you know, what's their music, their normal music like? Is it drums?
Receptive. Very rhythmic. They had more rhythm than most people I've met here.
some drummers that I've played with here. The kids could carry a beat. They were just very good, very quick to catch on. I mean, I couldn't teach them just songs. It was just more letting them play with my guitar. And there were some kids that I taught chords, a couple chords. And the little girls were rougher on my guitar than the little boys.
Wow.
But they were just really fascinated with everything, and the kids just really wanted your attention. You know, it was just a relationship. Mm-hmm. Really just wanted your attention.
Well, adults and children alike, they focus their praise around music. I mean, everything is musical. Their majority of their service was based around music and singing and dancing and just being in the spirit, all of them. Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest thing you two learned?
Is that it's not about stuff. It's not about, you know, what you can give them. It's about relationships. And I think that's something really big that we've taken away from it. And we just shared this story recently, is that there was a story of when we were up in the garbage dump on the mountain of trash. We were talking to a guy out there, and, you know, he was at first asking for things, and, you know, we didn't have anything to give, and he just broke down, and he was just talking to the guy, and he was just saying, I just want your time. I just want a relationship. And, you know, the Mozambican pastor actually gave him his phone number. And when we were walking back, and he said, you know, while we were coming back, one of the other guys said, you know, when you take away everything, you take away all the stuff, what's left is people, is relationships. And that was just something that really stuck with us. And it was just something very powerful. And
well, that is quite a powerful message when you think about it. Because here in America, of course, even the poorest of us have much more than they do. And, yeah, you take away everything, what do you have left? Yeah. Wow. Here's my question. We still have some time. Are you planning on going back?
We would go back to Mozambique.
We plan on going everywhere.
Yeah, we want to go everywhere.
We want to meet everyone. But what we took most from that trip was, like Jen just said, was the value of relationships, and we want to build a relationship with everyone that we can possibly meet. So we want to go everywhere and meet everyone, wherever we can. We want to be a part of everyone's life in some way,
wherever God leads us.
Which is my next question for you, Jen, and possibly Jenna. I understand that you're on your path, as I know, to being an ordained minister, and how would you fit that in? In other words, is missionary work, evangelical work, really your passion?
Probably, I would say evangelical work and mission work, to me, is one and the same. Because the mission field is here, the mission field is everywhere, and so.
That's true. What about you, Jenna? Did she leave?
I agree with what Jen just said. I have no intention on following, you know, that path as far as her, you know, being ordained and things like that. But I 100% agree with what she just said, that the missionary field is here, and there's a lot of work to be done here, and that
mm-hmm.
everything we did there was going out and talking to people and spreading the word, and that needs to be done here just as much as it did there. We went there to learn from those people, and we didn't go there to help anyone. We went to learn, and we did learn, and hopefully what we did learn we can spread here. And that's the plan.
And it's a good plan.
This hope, you know.
Yeah. Well, I know that God places people in situations, and Jen, you've been through this, for a reason. And many times it's to learn a tool for your toolbox for later on when he calls you to a specific purpose. I have, as you know, I have a tremendous amount of faith in the faith that you have. And Jenna, I'm learning slowly about yours. I think what we need to do when you all come back, because I know I'm going to want you back, and we're gonna carry on an internet to radio relationship here, since we live on opposite sides of the town and don't get to physically see each other very much. but we're working on that, folks. We are.
Far away.
part of the drive for me is this learning about people, this tolerance thing, but also it's, you know, learning from people. Learning about people's cool, like you said, but what can I, at my old age, gather? You know, the radio show was an experiment, and it's going into its third year now. So I want you both to come back, and I think, you know, we have many avenues other than the trip to Mozambique that we can discuss. I don't think you're prepared tonight, but maybe you are. I want people to hear your music. You have an amazing gift, Jen. I haven't heard Jenna, so, you know, I don't want to say anything. But I want people to hear your music. Do you got your guitar? Huh?
Yep, it's right here.
Okay. So, you know, if you're not prepared tonight, you know, don't let me put you on it, because you know I'm good about doing that, you know, putting you on the hot coals. But think about it. And then we're going to partner on, I think God has some partnership issues with us that he's being impatient about. I know he's slapping me around quite a bit. For those of you out there, I want you to understand, missionary work is as important as being a deacon, as important, if not more so sometimes, of being a pastor of a church, because your church becomes everywhere. And so it is with the radio station, too. I get letters from Brazil and Australia, and this is the same thing I'm feeling from you two. Is this need to just reach out and gather. What else do you have to say about Mozambique before we shut down?
It was an amazing place, and the people were actually one of the happiest people that I've ever met. They had absolutely nothing. They were all walks of life. Like you said earlier, they were both Muslim and Christian, and they coexisted very well there, from what I saw, anyway. Mm-hmm. And it was
community.
It was a community, and it was a community that I don't see here. They helped each other out, and
right, and that's true in a lot of third world situations, because that's all they have is each other.
Yeah, that is just what they have in each other.
Right,
massively, it's right here.
Yeah,
and wow.
Yeah.
I have a treat for you, I think. Let me ask my engineer. what he has queued up, but I want I specifically pulled another song from the, I don't know if you listened to the opening song by Taryn Williams, Head Up. But this song, too, is from Taryn Williams, and I want you to hear it as we close off here in a few minutes, because she reminds me so much of you, Jen, in the message that she has. And the reason why, for all you out there, I'm so excited about asking Jen and Jenna to come back and play, other than the fact that they're very good friends, is that the message of the music is just sometimes brings me to tears, tears of joy. And I know that's the Holy Spirit working. So we're going to ask Mr. Engineer in this magic thing. You know, isn't it great that it sounds like I'm broadcasting from Hollywood and I'm actually sitting here in my pajamas? I'm not, but, you know, I like to every once in a while. Also, I wonder, how long of a trip was it? You know, airplane and stuff. Wasn't it real long?
It was 16 hours on the airplane, 32 total hours of traveling.
Oh, my gosh. I would have been, type A person here, would have been climbing the walls as I was this last 6 weeks with, you know, being caught at home. You know, ouch, that goes one of my computers. One of the things about missionaries, see, this is such a great show. I mean, one of the things about missionary work is people don't realize you got to get from point A to point B, you know? And that's not like a 2-hour trip.
No, not at all. None of it was 2 hours.
I mean, yes. Okay, so the song that I'm going to have him cue in reminds me so much of both of you. Were you ever afraid while you were over there?
Afraid?
Yeah.
Really? I feel that. You weren't afraid? Were you afraid? I was afraid a few times, yeah. You weren't afraid in Johannesburg?
Oh, Johannesburg, yeah. I was afraid in Johannesburg.
Johannesburg, you were afraid?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because we thought we were stuck there.
Yeah.
Really?
That's a story for another time, probably.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Okay. So he's going to cue up for me here. He's doing it right now. A song again by Taryn Williams. This person is just, I think he would really love the rest of her songs. The album is called Letting Go of Perfect. Isn't that a great one for you, for both of you?
Yeah,
I know it fits
good.
Me. And the song is called Ordinary Angels. And the first time I heard this track, both of you came to mind. And every time I hear it, I still think of both of you. And it's not so much literal as it is the thought of what she's singing. And I want people out there, I don't know if I played Ordinary Angels for them, but each person needs to take this song and many others and apply it to their own life because it has a great lesson in it. So, Mr. Engineer, whenever you're ready, let's flip into that.
She's counting her change in the line at the counter of the grocery store. Every penny, every nickel she can find, but she still comes up short. Just a single mom doing the best that she can. A stranger slips a 20 in the palm of her hand. She turns around to thank him, but he's already disappeared out the door. Just because God doesn't part the sea, pull you from the fire, doesn't mean that he's not there. His fingerprints are everywhere. to go. But when he closes his eyes, he's still fighting that fight right here at home. When the nightmares come in the dead of the night, his little boy runs in, turns on the light and says, "Daddy, don't you worry," as he reaches up to kiss him on tippy toes. Just because God doesn't part the sea, pull you from the fire, doesn't mean that he's not there. His fingerprints are everywhere. Oh, when the mountain that you're climbing seems so tall, and the battle that you're fighting makes you feel so all alone, it doesn't mean you're on your own. When you need it most, the world
like the two people we just talked to, wonderful friends and the heart of an angel for sure. Okay, well, I thank you all for letting me share these people with you tonight. I hope you enjoyed the program. And as usual, I'll be back in 2 weeks and we'll continue with learning to be tolerant with one another. Good night and grace and peace. Thank you for listening to The Journey 8, and please come back and join us again. Remember, be kind in all you do, and the kindness will come back to you. Grace and peace, Judy Hosner.